Welcome to Podcast by Cole's Orchestra Uncovered, a behind-the-scenes, under-the-covers look at the magic of the orchestra. Today, we will delve into the role of the concertmaster, special violin techniques, the orchestra audition process, beautiful music, and fascinating stories with Pacific Chamber Orchestra's concertmaster, Igor Veligin. So let's start with that you're a concertmaster, being concertmaster of Pacific Chamber Orchestra. And, you know, when you come on stage, I shake your hand. And concertmasters, conductors everywhere shake the concertmaster's hand. Why is that?
I think it's just a formal greeting, and that's the way it's traditionally developed. And I think it's a nice way. Concertmeister is responsible for leading the orchestra, so I raise the orchestra when conductors come on stage, and so it just keeps it organized.
So when you say lead the orchestra, what does that mean?
I think for me, it means, well, not just for me, but I think the meaning of that is I interpret conductor's gesture and try to incorporate it into the music and try to lead the orchestra to the best of my knowledge how they should follow conductor.
And, you know, what I look for in a concertmaster is someone who is able to lead by, not by being ahead of everybody and they're following, but by them coming in together with the concertmaster. So the concertmaster has to somehow be able to indicate when you're going to play and how you're going to play.
Of course, it's a commute effort. I like to receive the signal from conductor and I try to send that signal to players, but at the same time, I am responsible for being with the players. I never like try to lead in a way that I would be ahead of the pack. That wouldn't be a good music.
No, it wouldn't at all. So, you know, you do the bowings with in advance. Sometimes we talk about the bowings. Why don't you describe the difference to us in terms of an up bow and a down bow?
Well, in general, bowings is something that Kunstmeister does so it fits best articulation of the orchestra. And they are like down bow is usually associated with downbeat, but not necessarily. And up bow is more like a pickup. But again, for string player, the best way to study the instrument is in such that it doesn't matter so much to play down and up bow. Ideally, I try to teach my student in such a way that it wouldn't matter for them so much because that makes it more flexible. But good bowing does help a good articulation and good phrasing.
Yeah. The way I kind of think of it, you know, yes, you're right. You want everyone to be able to have ability to do everything, but there is a tendency to have a little sort of sharper start, if you will, on a down bow. The way I kind of think of it is, if you're in a dark room, you can flick on the switch and the light comes on suddenly, or if you have a dimmer switch, you can turn the dimmer switch up so that it starts kind of soft and then it comes up. So there's a little bit of a not quite as sharp a start on an up bow.
Yes, the thing is like it's naturally comes that way, but so if it's enhanced, it can be very nice effect, but in a way you need to be able to start quite clear up and to being able to start from nowhere down. But yes, so that's the idea. If it's natural and it fits the music, then it's good to do what's natural. But like I said, again, it's best if that doesn't impact one's playing too much up or down bow.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree upon that because you never know what you're going to face in the music. So it may seem natural at first and then it actually doesn't work with everybody else.
It's interesting because like for some composers, bowing matter more and for some less. Some composers who are violinists, actually, it's much easier to bow those pieces because they, like when they compose it with the instrument in mind. But for some composer like Tchaikovsky, sometimes no matter what you do, it still feels that's not a good bowing. So,
yes. And I think sometimes, as you say, if someone's composing and is a violinist, it kind of feels natural because that's how they would do it. And if someone is a pianist and composing, well, you know, it doesn't necessarily come quite so obvious that way. Let's go to how you got to be a concertmaster. I mean, how did you start on the violin in the very first place? What attracted you to the instrument?
My father, when he went to army, and I am back from Ukraine, and so at that time it was a Soviet Union, he befriended a violinist, and he was fascinated with the sound. And my father is very musical, and he always liked music. He sung in a choir for his whole life, and he really loved the instrument. And when they came back from army after the service for 2 years, his friend became my first teacher, and that's how I started violin. And I fell in love quite fast with the instrument, so it was very natural for me, and I since that time never regretted it.
How old were you at that time?
I started when I was 5.
Okay, wow. That's an earliest time to start. And so it's obviously you grew up with it as natural part of your system by these days. What do you think was sort of the hardest to master on the instrument?
Violin as the instrument is very expressive, very flexible, but so it's for the same reason it requires a lot of precision. And I think no one really truly can say that they absolutely mastered that to the finest extent. It's always can be improved. So I think intonation on violin is very special, and it can be very expressive at the same time. That requires a lot of knowledge how to intonate, and requires a lot of skill and precision. So I think that's one of the most challenging part on the instrument is intonation, but also as a sound. Sound is also very you can different violinists can sound so different, and that's what makes actually a good orchestra. And that's I think what's wonderful about that instrument, that many players, they have their different colors, their different set of how they set up to play for their sound, but they know how to blend it together and how to make sections sound so wonderful. So I think the harder thing is the intonation on the violin, but there are other things, of course. You have to deal with the bow techniques and all of that. So it's very complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Do you recall somewhere along the way having anything that was a scary experience, anything that, you know, it's sort of like, I'm going to do this and I'm really nervous about it?
For me, I recall one situation when I was a kid, and I was still in a music school, and we supposed to play our annual exam in the school. And I was about probably like 7 or 8 years old at that time. And I supposed to perform by memory concerto. I can't remember now which concerto that was. But the way it was set up, we supposed to listen to our classmates. So we were all sitting in the same hall listening to each other. And as my time approaches to play, I am getting excited that I have to go and play. And then suddenly I realize I cannot remember how my piece starts. And like just because I was listening to everybody, I think it's completely bumped out of my head what I'm supposed to play myself. So I, as it gets closer, I'm really getting agitated, and now it's time to go on stage. I realize I don't know. I actually had even a little plan. I'm going to look at my pianist part a little bit, maybe that will remind me. And as I go on stage, my pianist says that, oh, I forgot music in a class. And I was like very excited about that. Oh, I'm going to go and pick it up. I'll bring it. So as I ran into the class and I hectically open up the music, and then, of course, it came back and what I supposed to play, and performance went well. But I remember that that was probably the most stressful experience in my life performing.
Yeah. Reminds me of an experience that I had. I was playing saxophone on Pictures at an Exhibition, which has a wonderful saxophone solo. This is also early days of performing. And it was the second performance. And before the second performance, some lady, wonderful woman, Kate Gut patron, came backstage. And she said to me, you know, my friend said to me that it was the only reason to come was to hear you play the saxophone solo. Well, that was very sweet, but it was a setup. When I was on stage and the solo came up and I started to play the solo, I just completely blanked out. And fortunately, I had worked on it so hard that my fingers and my breath kept going until my brain came back and nobody knew the difference but me. So stuff does happen, but we managed to make it through.
Yes, as you grow experience in that, and you have to develop different kind of memories. So in case one fails, then another can take over, and so you feel safe.
Yeah, you need to have all the strands of the rope together. On the other side, what for you would be an experience as a musician performer? There's always something, not always, but there are occasions where there's something incredibly memorable that just sticks with you. It has a meaning. Can you name one for us that really touched your heart in a certain way?
I think the ones that I remember as very special experience for me was once that when I got to perform with Odessa Philharmonic when I was still back in Ukraine, and we were on tour and we went to perform in Petersburg. And so I got to perform in that wonderful hall where in Petersburg Philharmonic, where the piece was that we performed was Shostakovich 7. And that was very special for me because Petersburg was one of the cities back in Soviet that was blockade of Leningrad. At that time, it was Leningrad. And the piece was, if I remember correctly, performed in that setup. So it was blockaded and from Nazis. And I got to perform that piece with our orchestra. I think that was a special experience for me.
Oh, yeah. Shostakovich 7th is an incredible symphony. And there's a section in there, which I remember, has a bass clarinet solo when I was playing in the Aspen Music Festival, which has these incredible runs, which is a representation of the German tanks rolling in. So that piece definitely had those kind of references to it, and to play it under those circumstances must have been an incredible experience for you. So let's talk about the violin itself. What, you know, pizzicato, we all know pizzicato and vibrato. What are some special, interesting things about the violin in terms of its technical capabilities? And on the one hand, the other hand, violins play beautiful melodies, but I've also seen violinists do things that are rhythmic or percussion-like in order to have some special effects. So if you want to talk a little bit about each of those, that would be really great.
Yeah, violin is one of the instruments, well, any string instrument are the instruments that has vast capability of playing different strokes and from... And the strokes, the way they performed, vary in technique, how you do it. So there are, pizzicato is like, it's pretty common. And so to achieve the sound that is similar to guitar, violinists play pizzicato. But there is also pizzicatos that, what's so-called Bartok pizzicatos that he developed to create that is more percussive sound. So the difference between regular pizzicato and Bartok pizzicato is that string, when you perform Bartok pizzicato, is supposed to hit the fingerboard, and that creates that sound like a percussion. So if you compare regular pizzicato versus Bartok pizzicato, in Bartok pizzicato, you can see that you get also the sound that is somewhat percussion. There are other techniques to get percussive sound of the instrument, which is used, for example, in Symphony Fantastique, and that is Calenio, and the way violinists play is would be, instead of playing with a horsehair, they would play with the wood of the bow. And the fact that achieved is something like that. I don't know if you can hear mm-hmm. it over the recording. But...
Oh yeah, that sounds almost tangle-like.
Yeah, so that's the idea. It's like it is played with the wood against the string. Another way to play different rhythmical structures, and Piazzolla used that a lot, would be what's called cicciara, and that's used in tango. And that's when violins would play behind the bridge. That kind of noise, and so like putting it into a different rhythmical structures, it can create a rhythmical part in an orchestra. And just simply slapping or hitting the instrument on a deck, also used often. So in case there is no percussions, violin can become percussion.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a drum, you know, when you do that. Yeah. And on the other side, there are these whistle tones, overtones.
Yes, there are harmonics. And the harmonics, at first, they were just like used as a natural harmonics, which has come from division of a string into equal parts. So if you have open string, and then if you play harmonics that divide the string into two equal halves, you will get octave over it. Then you will get another fifth over it if you divide string into three equal parts. And then into four equal parts, you will get another octave. And so on. If you keep dividing your string into this fractions of the string, you will get harmonics. And the nature of the sound is very different than regular sound because you hear particles of the string vibrating in a different direction. So, and then like you can use those to play the scale if you play, particularly those harmonics that divide string into four parts, you can play scale with it.
Wow.
Or you can play whole melodies with it and you can even vibrate it. And so on. So it's widely used on a violin, and some symphonic pieces are using them as well.
So what? Why would a composer decide to use that kind of sound, as opposed to just playing it on the regular string, just way up high? Because you can do those same pitches, right? Just on the E string, just go way up. So why not just do that?
It creates a different color because when you play harmonic, it's a different, you're getting like overtones basically. So if you play the same sound up high, like for example, you can hear the difference.
Uh-huh.
That's a regular sound versus.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds more like whistling, but harmonic sounds has more like a whistly tone, and sometimes. When violin means to imitate the flute, you can say that it somewhat sounds like a flute.
Yeah, it does. It does. Well, those are all really interesting things. Now, let's come back to the orchestra. Igor, you've been concertmaster with us for the Pacific Chamber Orchestra for, gosh, I guess a decade by now. And what comes to your mind in terms of playing with the Pacific Chamber Orchestra that is in or different from playing your experience with other groups that has led you to stay with us for a decade?
Yes, I think it's very special for me. I enjoy working with this group. I enjoy musicians in this group. We really feel like we can create special music with them. It's a little bit ridiculous what I said, but I really feel that the setup that we have is wonderful since it's a small group. It makes it more flexible, and so therefore it's a good blend of playing a symphonic repertoire but more like in a chamber setup where people are really paying attention to each other and collaborating on a closer basis at a bigger orchestra, I believe.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, and it reminds me of our performance of Brahms' First Symphony, which has, you know, we had like five firsts and 5 seconds or 4 seconds. Maybe it was 6 firsts, I don't remember, but it's certainly much, much smaller than you would get in a symphonic orchestra like a San Francisco Symphony. And so the demands on each player to really be there at the fore are that much greater, and brings a certain special kind of energy to the performance.
Yes.
And it's interesting too, I think, you know, from my perspective, I enjoy working with you and the whole group. You know, we come up with sometimes some very interesting, different, fresh ways of looking at pieces, and make certain things possible that wouldn't be otherwise. For example, in the Beethoven's Heroic Symphony number 3, there's this passage of theme and variations where in the first variation, I had just the principals play the quartet, and as opposed to having all the strings play, and then I still had the second violins come in with a in tutte with the 3 loud notes that sort of like saying, no, not like that. And the group, you know, felt it sounded like almost like a Haydn string quartet in doing it that way. And so there was an opportunity to do something that was unique that, you know, the larger symphony orchestra probably wouldn't even have tried to do. So, you know, I appreciate that that you and the orchestra is flexible to give a try to different sorts of interpretations and techniques. And sometimes you like what I do, and sometimes I say, well, you know, Lawrence, you've gone too far, and let's try it like this. And then we collaborate together to come up with something that's very special.
Yes, it's a different dynamic playing in the smaller groups like that, I think, where you feel that each player presents more value. Because like you said, yeah, if it's a bigger orchestra, it's different dynamic, and it's great, of course, but it just, it's special in a different way.
And I think there's another way that it's special, which is, you know, an orchestra like our size performs in smaller halls. We don't perform in these 2,000 seat, 3,000 seat huge halls. And in performing in places like the Bankhead Theater in Livermore, which is 500 seats, and the Lafayette Arena Presbyterian Church, for example, these smaller halls allow for much more visceral, visual, audio connection with the audience that makes everybody feel like they're part of the performance. And I think that that's also inspirational to the musicians as well.
Yes, I think so.
To learn more and support the Pacific Chamber Orchestra, go to pacificchamberorchestra.org. When someone auditions for an orchestra, there are certain things that the audition committee is looking for from a violinist so that they can tell if this person should really, you know, will fit into the orchestra and will be able to do it. And these days, there are hundreds of people that audition for a single spot in an orchestra, and there are committees set up. And these committees then, from the players' committees, then, you know, choose specific excerpts that will show off certain techniques and capabilities. What are a couple of excerpts that are typical in auditions, and why are those excerpts chosen?
Yes, in addition, the idea of having audition is for violinists to candidate to demonstrate their ability. And first of all, it's again that ability has to show that instrumentalist is capable of playing in tune and good rhythm. Those are always absolutely important aspects of a player to master. And then after that, of course, it can be judged on a musicality, it can be judged on dynamic range, it can be judged on style, and so on and so forward. So the idea of excerpts are to put little pieces of music that would demonstrate this. And often it includes Strauss' Don Juan, because that piece is quite difficult on a string instrument, and it can show brilliancy of instrumentalist and capability of going fast and passage work and all this. And very often it will be included for style, not often, but always. The excerpts would have some either Mozart or Beethoven excerpt. Also something that would demonstrate beauty of the sound, so some slow movements from either the same composers or others. For Kunstmeister, there always be excerpts that has some famous solo from orchestra repertoire to show the ability of Kunstmeister that can they can perform that solo. And for strokes, like if you take Midsummer Night Dream from Mendelssohn, that would demonstrate the ability of a musician to perform beautiful strokes, because those can be tricky very often. So some that's orchestral difficulties that demonstrate that player is capable and flexible of doing these different things.
It would be very interesting to hear you play the Mendelssohn Scherzo and give everyone an idea of what that means by having beautiful, precise strokes. And the challenge, I think, in the scherzo with these short notes and rhythmically have to be very precise is at the same time to make the sound be beautiful.
Yes, it's a combination of things. It's one cannot expect to get a good job in orchestra if they focus on only on technical aspects of the piece. So it's, and that's a challenge, because that's a lot of what puts a lot of pressure, that you go on stage for a very limited time and you have to perform this a little piece of music and demonstrate the most what you can. You should be equally demonstrating as technical abilities, so as your musicality.
Yeah, okay, well, it'll be great to hear you play that. So here's the scherzo from Mendelssohn Midsummer's Night's Dream. In terms of a solo for the violin, correct me if I'm wrong over here, but isn't the solo from Swan Lake something that is common for people auditioning for Concertmaster?
Yes, particularly if one is auditioning for Kunstmeister with a ballet. That ballet is very famous, and that's Kunstmeister will definitely get a chance to perform that solo. So, but it can be performed also on stage, because this is like such a beautiful music, and it can exist even without ballet dancers and not played only from a pit. I had a chance to perform this in a ballet setup and as well, and on stage.
You mean on stage with an orchestra playing the suite from Swan Lake?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And so just describe for me a little bit what it is people are listening for in that solo when they're evaluating potential people to be a concertmaster.
If you play in for the concertmeister position, again, I think it's very important that that solo is have to offer not just a good quality technically, but interesting interpretation. At the same time, knowledge of the fact that this is ballet. So you have to understand that when you play, and at least when you play in a pit, you're accompanying dancers, and conductor is following dancers, and you're following the conductor. So it should be interesting interpretation. At the same time, one has to realize that it has to fit the stage. When you performing it yourself, it can be freer because there is no, then conductor would just lead orchestra to follow the soloist, which is make it a little bit more relaxing, I guess, for the soloist in interpretation. But yeah, so just to show a good, nice, interesting playing, and particularly this one has written in flats. That in the E flat minor, it's a key that is can be expressive, but is not that easy to play in tune as well as, and yeah.
Ah, so that shows up intonation, and that's an interesting thing, which is that the way the violin strings are, it's easier to play, you know, the natural tones on the strings, or play a few sharps on it because of the way the fingering goes. When you start getting into the flat keys and the hand has to go back as opposed to going forward, that gets a little more complicated to do and requires much more attention to the intonation.
It's each key has a lot to offer on a string instrument, and yes, I think like if you play in, let's say, G major, D major, A major, those are the keys that are resonating easier on the instrument because those are the strings that you have open. And then when you play, they sort of give you a little bit of help if you listen to them properly. When you go to flat keys like E flat minor, there will be no ringing strings for that, but I think it's not like really technically harder to play for fingers, but what it is, you have to know how to listen to it properly. Otherwise, if you don't have this help from open strings and you don't feel well where's the root and how the darkness of that key, I think that's the reason why it's easy to get out of tune.
So would you mind playing that excerpt from Swan Lake for us? It would be lovely to hear that sort of sound that comes from that work.
Sure.
Oh, great. Okay, so here is Igor playing Swan Lake for us. Well, Igor, it's been really great talking with you, and I'm wondering if you have some piece of music that rather than an excerpt, but something you can share with us that in this time that we can all enjoy and listen to as a way to end our program over here. What do you think you might be able to play for us? This is the third movement, Burlesque, from the Violin Sonata No. 2 by Ukrainian composer and director of the opera in Kiev, Miroslav Skorik. That was from Igor Veligin's and his pianist Steinway artist Natsuki Fukasawa's CD, Voices of Eastern Europe. You can purchase Igor's CD and or support Orchestra Uncovered by going to podcastbykohl.com. That's podcastbykohl.com. Well, Igor, thank you for the time and appreciate your coming on Orchestra Uncovered here to talk about the violin, what's special about the violin and yourself in the orchestra. And we're looking forward now to listening to your final work. Thank you, Igor.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
I am Lawrence Cole, the conductor and executive director of the Pacific Chamber Orchestra, thanking you for tuning in to Orchestra Uncovered.